I worry a lot about with what happened in the market. I worry a lot about people that invested in 2021, and maybe those deals aren't going perfectly right now, and the d distribution's dried up. I mean, you hear in the news even worse than that. But like for a while, things have not been as strong as they were 3 years ago, and so I worry about those investors that invested then as their first time, because I'm afraid they won't do it again, and all they've done is experienced bad. And the reality of investing is you have to keep investing, because not every single one's going to be a home run. So what a fund does is it takes that and puts it all in one place. So within that fund, you're going to have some home runs, and you're going to have some base hits, and you might have one that breaks even. Like it could happen, but the reality is that overall, that fund should perform well because you're invested across multiple assets.
Let's get ready to scale. Hey guys, thanks for joining us for yet another episode of Ready to Scale. I'm your host, Jeanette Friedrich, Director of Investor Relations at Blue Lake Capital. Joining me today is Jason Ballara. Jason has a day job as a veterinary surgeon, but in addition to that, he's also the CEO and co-founder of Lark Capital Group, which basically focuses on providing multifamily and other types of real estate investment opportunities to fellow medical professionals. He graduated from Tufts University and has a DVM in veterinary medicine, and he's coming to us today from Los Angeles, California. So, Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jeanette. I'm so happy to be here. Excited to have yet another interesting conversation with you. I always enjoy these.
Absolutely. Before we dig in, I do want to remind those of you listening today to please make sure to like, rate, and subscribe to the show and leave us some comments so that we can continue to make sure that the show is bringing value to you and interesting to you. All right. So, on that note, I do know this episode is going to be interesting. So, first of all, Jason, really interesting story. So, you're a veterinary surgeon, which most people would say is like pretty awesome and not easy to, attain. But somehow you decide that you still want to get involved in real estate. So what's the story behind all that?
Yeah, and most people who know me as a veterinary surgeon, and I've been that since 2008, I guess officially. But I have actually been working in real estate and construction since I was a teenager. Grew up in a single mother, two kids. We didn't have a lot of money. We moved a lot. S those experiences sort of led me down the road of thinking that ownership, real estate ownership, was definitely a something I wanted. I didn't want to live in someone else's house. And so I saw that as kind of a way out, and started just by working with contractors, worked for an electrician, like just doing kind of the trade stuff, all the while working towards becoming a veterinarian, then a veterinary surgeon. So I was they really ran in tandem. But up until about 2020, everything I had done in real estate was on the single family and residential side. I did 1.0 to 3 family in Boston, which is where I'm from. And so that was, I guess, as close to, it's not commercial multifamily, but had tenants and, kind of did that piece in a small scale. And then in 2020, really, it had nothing to do with the pandemic, which is what everybody associates with 2020. It came down to two things. One, at that point, we had a 1-year-old son, and I was working all the time and on call as a surgeon. And it was just, I didn't want to be away from the family. And so I was trying to look at ways to create other sources of income that didn't require me being in an OR. And then the other piece of that was we had just finished our own house renovation. So I got antsy for a new project. Initially looked into, I live in Los Angeles now, as you mentioned, and it's hard to make rentals make sense here. You can do it, but it's a little challenging. And so I started looking at long distance real estate investing. First, I thought I might do that in the single family residential space. And then I started listening to podcasts and came across a syndication pod, or the Bigger Pockets podcast had someone who did syndication on there, and I was like, I don't even know what this was. And I just went down that rabbit hole and spent the next like probably 3 months really diving in with podcasts and books on syndication, learning as much as I could about it, and then realized that a mentor would be helpful. And that's when I met Ellie and signed on for her mentorship. And so that was kind of my beginning into the syndication space and commercial real estate. But I never stopped being a veterinary surgeon. I still am that today. I have my own business in that as well. But structuring those two things has taken some time to figure out how to make it all fit together. But it's getting, I guess maybe easier isn't the right word, but it's getting a little more streamlined.
Nice, very nice. And it's really interesting because just yesterday I happened to be talking to someone that has a very wealthy, affluent network due to their day job and their profession. And he was asking, and kind of exploring how he could do essentially exactly what you've done, and kind of create a fund and take advantage of his network and find a way to monetize that and bring additional value to his own network. And, a lot of people do kick the thought around, but of course, there's a big difference between kicking the thought around versus pulling the trigger and really diving in to do this. And so, what I'd like to talk about is, kind of what your experience has been like, your do's and your don'ts that you've learned along the way, some of the advantages, that you've discovered, and some of the disadvantages that have been a little challenging that you've had to work through, and, just kind of really pull back the veil and help people understand, very transparently what it is like to create and begin to execute having your own real estate fund. But before we do, let's go ahead and have a word from our sponsor. Ready to Scale is brought to you by Blue Lake Capital, where we hunt down the best multifamily investment opportunities that we can find and invite investors to join in with us. We target Class B value-add multifamily properties across the Sun Belt. Our CEO, Ellie Pearlman, invests a substantial amount of capital into every deal. This means our interests are aligned with yours. If you're an accredited investor looking to expand your portfolio and diversify sponsors, be sure to visit us at bluelake-capital.com. Blue Lake Capital, be bold, be extraordinary, and keep moving forward. So, Jason, now that you have been doing this for several years and really have gotten your feet wet, and I know you partnered with us on several deals, which has been great. What would you say has been, your experience in actually standing this fund up and getting the legs underneath it?
Yeah, starting the fund has been a really interesting experience, and I think again, I guess Ellie to thank for that. We had lunch. This was back, I guess, almost a year ago. We had lunch, and she said, "What's next for you?" This is after doing some several single deals and working as a an asset management of those. But the real estate market, I'm sure a lot of people know, a lot of your listeners know, has changed a lot over the last couple of years with interest rates and things, and so. Things had slowed down, and she asked me, what's next for you, and said, I think you should start a fund. And I really didn't like the idea at first. I really had always kind of been anti that for a couple reasons. One, I was like, well, yeah, that's great for the sponsor, but why is it good for the investor? And like all of the challenges that are associated with it, which there are many. But again, I trust her. I trust her a lot, and I thought a lot about it. And I decided there was maybe a way I could really bring my two worlds together, which I hadn't. I had kind of kept everything separate. There was like my real estate world and my veterinary world, and I'd kept them pretty separate up to that point. And then I thought, well, maybe this fund could be the way that brings it all together. So that helped me, I guess. Shift my mind towards thinking the fund made sense. I would say, from a structuring standpoint, it's at the beginning not that different from a single deal. You still need all the legal paperwork and things like that. The wording and everything is a little bit different in there. You're within a fund, you are purchasing multiple deals. Within our fund, we're doing real estate and businesses. So I had to get very granular with the SEC attorney about what can I do that? What's the structure, all of that. So it's pretty strictly defined as to what percentage of the equity can go to, what portion of the fund. And then from there, you're into that sort of capital raising piece. And for me, that's always been maybe one of my weaknesses, points that I shied away from. And I think it's funny, if I could go back in time, Ellie used to ask me probably almost at least monthly, if not more, during the mentorship, do you want to find deals or do you want to raise capital? And I was always just afraid of raising capital. And so I said, I want to find deals. I'll do that. And I did that. And so I focused on that and everything. But what I have since learned is the capital raising side of it hard, but also maybe one of the most important components, both from you need the capital to get a deal closed, but you also, that's where we educate. That's where we provide awareness. That's where, we talked, you mentioned, sort of the going out to your network. It becomes very much about letting that network know, because if your network isn't already a whole bunch of people that invest in real estate and understand what, the benefits of being a passive investor are, then they may not know what this is. I've talked to many of my friends, mainly in the veterinary space. They don't necessarily even know if they're accredited or not, and they are. And so they don't know what opportunities are available to them. They don't know, most people think, okay, I know real estate is something that people say helps make you money, but I don't really want to go buy a house and find someone to rent it and all of this. But the reality is they don't have to do any of that. They can get involved in real estate passively in many, even passively, you can be in it many different ways. You can be within a fund, you can invest in a single deal, you can be a hard money lender. Like, there's a million different opportunities in real estate, and I think people just don't know about it. So if I could travel back in time, I would have picked I want to be a capital raiser, in the sense that I would have used that time, that education time with Ellie, a little bit differently. Thankfully, I still get to stay connected to you and Ellie and everybody over there. So I have the the good fortune to still have the be able to ask those questions. But I think it's been challenging. It's been I really like the conversations. I really like the education that we're trying to provide. It does take a little bit more explanation, in the sense that people have a lot more questions about, like, if you're buying a single deal, they understand, okay, we've got this one deal under contract, and it closes on X date, probably in, 30 to 45 days from now. We need to do all this stuff, get the paperwork done, get the money in by then. And then with a fund, you are essentially raising capital until you reach the target, or you get to the sort of the end of the defined capital raising time. And so it spans over, maybe if you have an evergreen fund, it spans over forever, right? And so it's kind of depends on the structure of that fund, but ultimately there's less urgency. And so I think sometimes that is a challenge with investors. Like, they don't actually have to invest immediately, because the fund isn't closing in 30 days, right? And so they're like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. I'll get in it, in a little bit. What they don't recognize, I think, and one thing I've found myself talking about a lot, and I don't have to be honestly interested in your opinion on this, with a preferred return, if a fund has a preferred return, I think what they're not realizing is that preferred return starts calculating as soon as you put your money in. And so although you may not purchase a deal immediately, and in theory your money could be sitting there, but really it's not sitting there. It is distributed amongst all of the assets in the fund. You start accumulating your preferred return when you invest. And so by not investing and waiting, and you're leaving the money sitting in a savings account, even if you have a high interest savings account, you might be getting 4 or 4.5%. But if the preferred return is 6, 8, 10%, you're accumulating that money already, you know, being having moving it into the fund. So there's a lot of nuances that I think I've found needing to explain to people, and you know, they're like, well, am I investing in this deal? You're investing in a fund that then invests in multiple deals. And so there's probably a lot more trust involved in it too, because you are saying you do have to, within the legal paperwork, define your fund strategy. But at the same time, those people are saying, here's my money. You do what you do. We believe you're good at it. You know, go ahead. Whereas if it's a single deal, they maybe have a little bit more, they can get a little bit more granular on that specific deal if they're an investor that understands those sorts of things. So you may have a different investor profile for a fund versus a single deal, but at the end of the day, it's diversification. If I worry a lot about with what happened in the market, I worry a lot about people that invested in 2021, and maybe those deals aren't going perfectly right now, and the distribution's dried up. I mean, you hear in the news even worse than that, but like for a while, things have not been as strong as they were 3 years ago. And so I worry about those investors that invested then as their first time, because I'm afraid they won't do it again, and all they've done is experienced bad. And the reality of investing is you have to keep investing, because not every single one's going to be a home run. So what a fund does is it takes that and puts it all in one place. So within that fund, you're going to have some home runs, and you're going to have some base hits, and you might have one that breaks even. Like it could happen, but the reality is that overall, that fund should perform well because you're invested across multiple assets.
Absolutely, absolutely. I definitely agree with you. I don't think that people always have the level of urgency that you would expect they would if they really do understand that they can be accruing, those preferred returns from day one, because essentially that's just leaving money on the table, right? So I think that you're very correct in speaking to that point. I actually had not really thought about it exactly like that. And until you actually pointed it out. So it's actually a very good point. So I do think that that is probably one thing, that I have overlooked that maybe other investors also have overlooked. And it's a great point. It's interesting too, because yesterday I was speaking with someone about money market accounts. And money market accounts are not an investment strategy. For right now, it's a short term, positive bump, to people's cash flow. But it's really very short lived, and it's certainly not going to remain that way. And in the meantime, some people are passing up some really great opportunities coming into the market because they feel safer in a account. And the reality is that when you have big goals, you have to be willing to get out of your comfort zone. And I think it really comes down to the mindset of, are you playing defensively or offensively? And I think right now, given the market conditions, a lot of people are feeling the need to retreat and be defensive instead of offensive. And the reality is that yes, you can be defensive and protect yourself, but you're also not going to really move the needle much at all, with that type of mindset and that type of approach. So I think it's just really important to touch on and agree with what you said. When it comes to investing, success through investments is not a fast win. It's not get rich quick. It's nothing like that. It requires dedication and consistency, and a very diversified approach, because you invest in different things for different reasons. And so it's not, it's not per se apple to apple, it's more apple to orange. And that's why you need to have that, variety of fruit in the bowl, if you will, because that's what it takes to really have a comprehensive investment strategy in place, right? So I think those are some really good points, and I appreciated very much your transparency in admitting that capital raising can be very intimidating and hard. I mean, it definitely is hard. What I enjoy about it is that To a certain extent, real estate investing can become very transactional. And that has no heart to me. That has no soul to me. And so, what I really do love about capital raising is it keeps the heart in the business, it keeps the soul in the business. When you are building these relationships and you can see the direct impacts of people being able to move from, say, retiring early and, being able to improve the quality of their life or working towards, really fundamental goals for themselves, I find that to be really fulfilling. And so even though, yeah, it's about returns and money, for me, what I enjoy about it is actually that relationship component and knowing that there's purpose behind all of this and it means more, which is, one of the things that I really love. On that note, I am curious because again, I'm not a medical professional, so I've never thought about this. There's a lot of reasons why it's important for people to have investments, especially if they really want to do, achieve any type of significant wealth creation. But why is it particularly important for people that are in the medical field?
I think, yeah, I mean, I agree. It's important for everybody. In the medical field, there's a couple of reasons. I think, and I'm a veterinarian, so I can speak specifically to veterinarians, but I've actually spoken to a number of other doctors on my podcast about like their experiences, and they seem to be very similar. It seems to be kind of a parallel. Basically, one is you committed a large chunk of your life towards becoming whatever type of doctor it is, right? So, like, I went to 4 years of college, 4 years of vet school, and 4 additional years of training in surgery. And so, for 12 years, I was either paying someone or I was making basically enough money to live on barely. Like, that's when you're in those training phases, that's what you make. Then you flip-flop to actually making some money. And so it's like you have this head down, get to the next level mindset for so long, and then you get out and you actually make maybe more money than you've ever seen, especially from someone like my background. And it's you don't know what to do about it, right? You don't, because in those 12 years of schooling, never once did we talk about finance. Never once did we talk about business. None of that is brought up. There isn't time for it. Like we in vet school, we were taking tests every week, usually multiple times a week. So you were constantly just study, 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 anatomy, physiology, whatever it is. And I know that's the same for MDs and dentists and all. And so you get in that mindset of working so hard to get to the next level, and then you get out and I think you start to actually get paid for what you trained so hard to do, and you think, I deserve X. Now I did all this. Now I can have the nice car, I can have the nice house, I can have a boat, I can go on nice trips. And I'm not saying that people should never do those things, but it's easy to get into that like lifestyle creep, where you just start spending to match whatever you're making. And I guess the example I would use, and I think this would probably apply across all medical professionals, but the example I would use is for me, I used to train residents. I used to train veterinarians in surgery. And so they were in that same position that I was, where they would have be just making like literally just enough to live at that point. But I would tell them, listen, you're going to finish, and then you're going to go get a job and you're going to make more money than you have seen before. Live like a resident for 3 more years and invest all of that money. Just do it for a little bit longer. And I think this is would be the same across medical fields. If people knew about this stuff and they just invested in it just invested passively for those 3 to 5 years after you're done with your specific training, and you'll set yourself up for life. Because now that money's invested, you let that equity continue to double like it does every 5-ish years, and you'll be set with assets that are growing in value over time, and you maybe don't even have to put anything else in after that time. Like, it's just if you start early and are aggressive, you really can use time to your advantage. And so I think people get caught up in the lifestyle creep. I think being a doctor is hard in terms of it's time consuming. There's a lot of mental fatigue in the veterinary world, and I'm sure other medical practices. There's a lot of burnout, and so people then don't they get in this cycle where they can't think about shifting. They can't think about making a change. I mean, even for me, like I still do surgery, but now I do it because I enjoy it. But like the idea of changing careers in effect after going through all of that, I wanted to be a vet since I was a kid. Like after going through all of that and doing all of the work and taking this, horrendous board exam that you study for 2 months, like all of this stuff that goes into it, and to think, okay, maybe I want to do something else. Like, that's a hard thing to think about. And a lot of people don't want to do something else, but they should take that money to create themselves additional streams of income passively. And that's where I started. I mean, I started with passive investing with Blue Lake Capital. Like, that was my first investment was, okay, I want to see what someone else does while I learn this process and see what it's like to be the passive investor. And because what you said about, capital raising and that being really the relationship side of the business versus, closing a deal being very transactional, I think is a really important piece because it is like all of the stuff that goes into closing a deal is super cold and transactional. It's just like these are the steps. And basically everybody does them about the same. Like there are a few nuances, but like you have your steps to doing a real estate deal. But then the two things that keep going are asset management and capital raising, or investor relations, I guess, if you will. And so there's so much focus on the closing of deals, but like really what matters is asset management and investor relations, because that's the stuff that's going to be the asset management is going to make you successful. It's going to make you do what you said you were going to do to those investors that trusted you. And then the investor relations is just making sure that they have a good experience while it's happening. Like, I would venture to guess you could give back tremendously good returns, but if you never communicated and never did anything to show those investors that they were appreciated, they probably aren't going to reinvest with you or tell their friends about you. But you might have an average deal that if you communicate well and you keep them front of mind, and they're going to come back and realize that if you had an average deal, you did everything you possibly could, and you fought market conditions, you fought a pandemic, whatever happened, like condition things happen that affect real estate deals. But overall, like if they know, if your investors understand that their best interests are always your first thought, then they'll come back to you. And I think that comes back to the whole, education and awareness piece, and letting the medical community know that this is a good idea. Like I do the active side of it, but like I am putting as much money from my veterinary, like our active income, into passively within our own deals, within your deals. With like I just want to get as much in so that the time has started ticking and it's going to grow over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Really appreciate, one, the relationship we have with you and your perspective about that. And it's an excellent point. Everything you just said actually was really interesting and absolutely excellent points. Very, very true when you take the time component into it and really recognize the value of time and how finite it is, and really keep that top of mind in your own strategies. That's a really good point, for sure. And I do agree with you also that I think investors also enjoy investing, and they want to have it be an enjoyable experience. And without the relationship component, it's not really as enjoyable. I mean, the reality is at least for especially most people in multifamily, we're all kind of dorks. We're all like way into it, and it's like fun because
Right. Yeah,
you meet
you get
people.
obsessed once you start doing it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's like you meet your people and these are your people, and So I can honestly say, I mean, there's multiple investors that I've become truly just friends with. I mean, I even had, a couple at my wedding, Larry and Sharon. Hi. It's just great, the relationships that you're able to build that bring so much more meaning and joy into everything. So, last but not least, before we get to the lightning round questions, I am curious because I just also love business. What have been some of the interesting differences of how you look at, say, asset management when it comes to multifamily or real estate versus these businesses that you're fund invest in?
Actually, surprisingly, not that different. The difference, the biggest, probably the biggest difference is the debt, especially right now. So real estate, I know you understand this, but maybe some people listening or investors don't always understand. When we buy commercial real estate, we buy an apartment complex. It's a business. We are buying a business. It's the business of renting apartments to residents, making them happy, maintaining the apartment. That is, in fact, the business. And there are, profit and loss statements and all of the same stuff that you would see with the small businesses that we're looking at in our fund. There's like I said, the biggest difference probably is going to be the debt structure, in the sense that right now in the multifamily world, it's hard to get leverage probably above 60, 65%, especially on new debt, because of the interest rates. A couple of years ago, when interest rates were, three, you could go as high sometimes as like 80% leverage. The most small businesses, however, are purchased with either an SBA loan or seller financing. Like, that's generally how it works in the space. Or, like, sometimes you buy it with all cash if you're buying something small and you're going to roll it up into existing businesses. But ultimately, the SBA will allow you to leverage at 90%. And the reason they'll do that is because, in order to get an SBA loan, it has to be a business that has been in existing for at least 2 years. It has to be able to show good growth and profitability throughout that time, that it's been progressing in the right direction. There's a number of, like, specific things, criteria that have to be met. It's a recourse loan. So an SBA loan is, like, when I do those, they actually, if that business were to fail and I didn't pay them back, they'd come after my house. That's not typically what we do in commercial real estate. Generally, those are non-recourse, and so, if something goes bad, then except for those little carve-outs, you have the bank just takes it back. But that's why the leverage is different too, right? So the banks are going to leverage it whatever they feel is safe, that they can take it back and still make money on it, or at least break even. So that's the biggest difference. I would say the other difference, with direct respect to our fund, is the way that I modeled them. With the real estate piece of the fund, we modeled in both the cash flow, but a lot of the money that you make right now, again, and with rates so high, a lot of the money is going to be made at sale. With the businesses, all I modeled in is the cash flow. I didn't even model in a sale of the business. The plan is to make the businesses better and more profitable and sell them for more. But what I really wanted to show with our fund is that if we layer on that cash flow from these small businesses, it makes those returns substantially better, and allows and substantially better on an ongoing basis, I guess, if you will, so that the distributions can be higher in theory. So that's how I modeled it. I didn't want to model it where we're like, oh, the real estate's going to go to here, the businesses are going to go to here. But it leaves a lot of it actually leaves a lot of room for growth. You can do, I mean, you guys at Blue Lake, you purchase large apartment assets with the potential to sell to institutional investors. With these small businesses, one thing that we could do is, if we strategically buy within a particular industry, and we had three, four, five of one particular type of business, and we showed profitability, and then we roll them up to a private equity firm, now your multiples go from like 2 to 3x to 10x. And so now you're kind of creating money out of air just by doing that strategy. So definitely something I have my eye on, but I didn't at all put that. That's not on any spreadsheet for any, you know, I'm not telling people that that's going to happen, but if that happens, that'll be a huge payday for the investors.
Super cool. Very interesting. I might have to get in on that, Jason.
Yeah, that'd be great. Love to have you on board. But it's just something that I came to the structure because of what I was doing in my own life, in the sense that we had, you know, we'd gone in aggressively with real estate. The market shifted, distribution stopped on a lot of deals, our own deals, other deals I'm invested passively. And so I started doing more surgery. And I was like, okay, well, I ramped up a business to increase cash flow during this time. What if I did that at scale? What if I did that for investors? Like, because at first I was like, well, I'll just buy another business and we'll make money. And it's like, well, can I do so? That's when you get into that, you know, talk to your SEC attorney, structure it correctly. Like, is this a possible thing? We can only have 20% of the equity directed towards businesses. So the SEC tells us how we can do this stuff. So it is about as safe of an investment. I mean, you think about that, like we're talking about this with investors being timid right now and because they're trying to do the safe thing, but it's like it's about as safe of an investment as you can find to invest in someone that has SEC attorneys on their team, and all of this is structured in like even like these, like I talked about these SBA loans. That's a government loan based on very specific criteria. Like if that happens, someone believes in it, right? And it's someone who has been doing this probably at a much larger scale than you know most retail investors. So it's just things to think about from a are you really being safe by avoiding it? Probably not.
Yeah, probably not. I like summing it up right there. Probably not. All right, very good and very interesting. We will have to talk more about that offline for sure. But in
Okay.
the meantime, let's go ahead and do what we call our lightning round questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So when you're not, creating all kinds of interesting models and scooping up businesses and real estate, what do you also do for fun?
I love exercise and I love spending time with my family. Sometimes those things get combined, but yeah, I play soccer still. I'm in a old man soccer league. I love it. I still am a probably more competitive person than I should be at this age, and but I do. I love it, and I between that and you know spending time with my wife and kids, that's really like downtime for me.
Awesome. All right. What's something interesting that most people don't know about you?
I like tattoos, and I have tattoos. I think a lot of people don't expect that in the medical world. And I have always thought they were a super cool art form. And I just am in the midst of getting a new one that's a tribute to my daughter. So I'm a big fan. So most people probably don't know that.
Very interesting. Okay. All right. What about as far as a book? What book would you recommend investors should definitely include in their library?
Who Not How. Who Not How is it. The title is obvious what it's about, but it's more than that. It really was a very powerful mindset shift for me because I think I said like I was a DIY guy. I love like I still want to flip houses so that I can teach my kids the stuff that I know about construction. I've got a garage full of tools just kind of sitting there collecting dust right now. Like I've done all of the stuff with my hands. But at this point, it's not the best use of my time unless I really want to do it. And Who Not How, it teaches you, it helps you shift that mindset. It brings up a lot of kind of what you might think of as silly examples, but like actually pretty powerful when you really look at it. Like no investor, like nobody with maybe even nobody in general, but like you shouldn't be going to the grocery store unless you like going to the grocery store. You shouldn't be cleaning your own house unless you like cleaning your own house. Like there are people that's their job and they'll do it for reasonable money and it saves you the time. And so that's and especially like in the veterinary world, that is one of the big issues is that vets come out, for whatever reason, come out of vet school and think they're supposed to be able to do everything. And it's like, literally all I do is surgery. I don't, if you came to me and you're like, what should I vaccinate my dogs with? I don't know. I don't know. I do surgery only, and I do it very, very well. And so it's taking, that specialist mindset into the rest of life. And so I felt like reading Who Not How was had a lot of really cool ideas, but also kind of like gives you permission in a way, like lets you think, okay, yeah, I probably can just let someone else bring us the groceries or whatever, that kind of thing. Like, it's just little stuff like that. But it was been very powerful for me.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm definitely going to read it. All right. Now, we talk about on the show that one of our goals is helping our investors build and live extraordinary lives. We're bold, we have huge goals, and we like it that way. So what would your advice be for someone who is committed to building and living an extraordinary life?
You gotta start. You gotta start and get, like we already talked about this, but like the time in the market, and you gotta start, and you gotta look at it as a long-term thing. And if you're passive, the worst thing that you can lose is the worst thing that can happen is you lose some money. If you're an active investor, stress, loss of sleep, loss of money, there's a lot that goes along with it. And I think a lot of us active investors have found that out over the last couple of years, that being passive is actually like a pretty stress-free thing once you kind of commit to it. But you need to start. It's a long-term thing. I actually did a podcast episode on it, but it was just this silly thing where my son and I were joking around, and he's at the age where he's 5, and like numbers are interesting, but he still doesn't understand how they all relate. And I jokingly was like, hey, he was talking about like a kajillion dollars or something. And I'm like, do you want to be a billionaire? And he said, yes. And long story short, I created a spreadsheet to see if I could actually make that happen. And it's legitimately like very possible that if I set the foundation, that my kids can retire as billionaires without as much of a commitment as you might think, because of the power of time. Like, my son's 5. When he's 70, that's a whole lot of doubling cycles of whatever equity he has in there. So it's just something that has become really, really, just the concept of time and using it to my advantage goes along with the who, not how. It's just has become really, really important in my life. And I think the way to maximize it is by starting.
Excellent advice. Excellent advice. All right. And then last but not least, Jason, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they find you?
Email jason@larkcapital.com. Our website is larkcapital.com. You can find me on social media. It's pretty easy. There's about maybe like 8 Balaras in the world, so it's not hard to find me.
All right, very good. Well, thank you very much. Really enjoyed our discussion. Very insightful. And just nice to see you again too. For
Always great to talk, Jeanette. Thank you.
those of you that joined us today, thank you for investing your time with us. We appreciate it. Please don't forget to leave us some comments and let us know more of what you'd like to hear about. And in the meantime, be bold, be extraordinary, and keep moving forward.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.